Please call the case.
Case numbers SCPW 11732, Solomon v. Abercrombie, and SCPW 11741, Matsukawa v. Reapportionment Commission. Arguing for the petitioners, Stanley Roerig, Robert Kim, and Peter Van Name Esser for petitioner Solomon, and Michael Matsukawa for petitioner Matsukawa. Arguing for the respondents, Charlene Aina for respondent Abercrombie and Russell Suzuki for respondent Reapportionment Commission. Also appearing for the respondents, Robin Chun for respondent Reapportionment Commission. Argument on the merits.
Good morning, counsel. Are you all ready to proceed today? One or two preliminary matters. We have an application for extended coverage. Were there any objections to extended coverage this morning? None? Okay. Then we'll go forward with the extended coverage. In terms of our timing, just to be sure we're all on the same page, Mr. Roerig, you have, on behalf of Petitioner Solomon et al., 15 minutes.
Yes, Your Honor.
And there'll be a yellow light will come on at the end of that 15 minutes, and then Mr. Matsukawa, you'll have 5 minutes. You'll get a yellow light, then we'll switch over to the respondents. Ms. Aina, 15 minutes, and there'll be a yellow light at the end of your time. Mr. Suzuki, 15 minutes, a red light at the end of your time, and then 10 minutes have been reserved by the petitioners for rebuttal. Is that everyone's understanding of how the time's been apportioned? Okay, very well. If you'd like to proceed, Mr. Roerig.
Thank you, Your Honor. Distinguished Chief Justice, and members of the Supreme Court. My name is Stan Roerig. I'm appearing for Petitioner Malama Solomon et al. The 2011 Reapportionment Commission final plan filed September 26, 2011 was unconstitutional. Not a little bit unconstitutional, a lot unconstitutional. The guidelines and standards adopted by the Commission on April 11, 2011 give a very straightforward procedure for the commissioners to follow to get the extraction correct and to get the deviation correct. We have two parallel constitutional matters going on at the same time. Those standards that the commission adopted on that day, they had a PowerPoint presentation of that exhibit. That's the exhibit Appendix F. The procedure outlined in their own exhibit shows that it's a very simple process. They got it wrong. They were repeatedly told, as the minutes reflect, for specifically June 28th and September 19th, that they were doing it backwards, yet they continued to proceed to do it backwards, and they got it backwards. Now it has to be fixed.
Mr. Roerig, if I might interrupt you, assuming that we agree with you that the final reapportionment plan is constitutionally flawed. What is your response to Senator Green's argument or his position that HRS Section 25-2 would require opening up additional public hearings on each island unit if a new plan were adopted?
We were going to have Mike Matsukawa address that. Mr. Justice, but I'll respond briefly. We don't think there's enough time. If we have to have public hearings around the state on the ripple effect of this tragic error, we're going to have public hearings all over Oahu for every district and in the Big Island as well. And if this court deems it appropriate to extract 100% of the non-resident military dependents and students, that figure is about 120,000. That is going to necessitate the changing not only of the House, but not only the Senate, but the House as well. And so we had a chat about that, and we feel that there is no specific directive that it has to take place. The public input has been great already. Everybody has had an opportunity to testify or present their own plans or their own refinement on House plans and Senate plans. We're not against it. We just think because of the time crunch that this court is facing in this important matter, that if there's going to be public hearings, it's got to be truncated.
Mr. Roig, is it your client's position that we should order that all 120,000 non-residents be extracted, or that we should leave that to the commission's discretion, that we should order extraction B or extraction C? What kind of an order do you envision this court giving the commission?
We think that it is fundamentally of first order importance for this court to say in its decision, assuming that it determines that this is an unconstitutional plan, this court needs to tell the future reapportionment commissions from now for all time that when the Constitution says that it says all of the people counted in the census less all of the non-resident military dependents and students, that means all of them, for every non-resident military or dependent or student that is left in, that becomes a dilution of the one man, one vote principle. So we collectively as a state, we don't want this to happen very often where the commission does what it did and does the extraction backwards. The consequence of it doing it backwards was the final deviation between the average size of a Senate seat on Oahu versus the island of Hawaii is 17.9.
Mr. Warren, assuming that they're not able to get the specific zip codes or of military personnel like they had been able to get in the past censuses, how is the reapportionment commission supposed to determine the specific districts that the non-residents should be extracted from?
Let me start out this way, Madam Justice. First things first is the easy proposition, according to their guidelines and according to Article 4, Section 4, is to start with the proposition all of them are to be subtracted from the census to arrive at the permanent resident base for apportionment. You divide that by 25, you get the average number for voters in each senatorial district will be identical. You can do that with 51 House members, identical. Then when you get to Article 4, Section 6, and you've got to go and apply it on the ground, that's where the pilakia starts. And I think that's what you're addressing here. How do we extract it out of the neighborhood? Our answer is you do the best you can. You have to make reasonable approximations. But you don't do that. You don't do that off the top. You do that after you have made everybody equal. Now, there is discussion in the literature about the method of equal proportions. That is not a talisman for doing it wrong. Equal proportions is just a mathematical concept. And it's part logic, and it's part common sense, and it's part math. And what it is you just make proportions.
If 47,000 people, I guess, were identified as 47,000 people, I might have the figure inaccurate, mm-hmm. were identified as being non-residents. I guess 47,000 military people?
There's 40, 7,000 active duty military personnel. That does not count all of their dependents.
Right.
That's so another 58,000.
That's undisputed. That they would be counted as non-residents.
Absolutely. That's undisputed. And I believe it's undisputed that all of their dependents that are in that exhibit P, appendix P, all of their dependents are to be extracted, and all of the non-resident students. But that, like I said, that's the easy part.
If those people were extracted, would that still result in one Senate seat going over to the Big Island?
To answer your question, Mr. Justice, the work done by the reapportionment staff indicates that all you have to do, and this is, I believe, is Exhibit N, Appendix N, and I believe all you have to do is extract 20,094.
So you could, based on the 47,000 indisputable people who are non-residents, on that basis alone, you would be able to shift one Senate seat over to the Big Island?
That's correct. But the problem doesn't end there, and we agonized over it, because we're here trying to get a Senate seat, but we're also here trying with the court, under the big picture of things, to get it right the next time, and that means 100% of the non-residents have got to be taken off the top at the outset. Some people can live with 47,000, some people can live with 67,000, but the Constitution says it's one man, one vote.
Mr. Roark, what if you don't know where they live? What if the Commission doesn't know where 50,000 of those people live? Would we be setting ourselves up to be violating the Constitution with regard to the districting inquiry then under Section 6, or is there a way around that potential problem?
The federal constitutional cases around all the 50 states indicate that you make reasonable approximations. And the Reapportionment Commission has done that in the past in Hawaii in 2001, and they did it also in 1991. They have to estimate. The Reapportionment Commission staff, in particular Mr. Rosenbrock, he's familiar with that. The fact that they have glitches because of security purposes, that they can't get it absolutely as good as they want to, does not mean that they can't make approximations. When we get to the neighborhoods, we got four or five districts, Senate districts on Oahu. I might have the math wrong, but I think it's four or five. And the same number doubled out of House members, where the boundary lines are going to move depending on where the quarters are for the troops who are on that base. And that kind of minute changes that are going to have to be made should not be confused with the general proposition that the Equal Protection Clause in Article 4, Section 4 says at the outset, you got to take them all off the top. And that's the pilakia with what they did. And they nowhere more clear is it laid out than in their answer. If you look at their answer at page 2, they indicate what they believe to be the way you do it. And if you look at the way they do it in their answer, they have it backwards. They say you take it out of the neighborhoods first by census block, but that's not the proposition. Now, the reason why their standards that they develop are so important, that were referred to repeatedly by witnesses, say, hey, you got to follow your own standard. These standards were hammered out after the last two reapportionments done in 91 and 2001. Those standards tell you, they get cut through all the gray area of all the constitutional issues, and they say, you take it off the top, and then they say, you don't have a deviation more than 10% between the smallest Senate district and the largest. And it means inter-island, not intra-island.
In 1991, the commission used the same standard that you say should apply here.
Yes.
That is a permanent resident. And in 2001, the commission used a permanent standard provision or standard to apply.
Yes.
And in this case, in April, this commission set out in their guidelines that they would use a permanent resident population and expressly said they would exclude non-resident students and non-resident military sponsors. In the initial plan that went out, why didn't they do that? Why didn't the commission do that?
We could only speculate because there's nothing in the minutes where they ever talked about it. It's very confounding. We've looked at the minutes very, very carefully. And the June 28th meeting, the August 17th meeting, the September 19th meeting, September 23rd meeting, nobody, no commissioner ever said anything in the minutes.
Is there anything in the prior records of the reapportionment commissions in our case law, in the Constitution, or in the statute that says that the commission is to use only a census standard or population standard?
Without excluding the non-residents?
Well, is that what the commission came out with initially?
The
just using
came,
a census
the
standard?
The commission came out with a process. Their June 28th vote was to leave everybody in. And based on a philosophy that it's been wrong and this is the way we're going to change it. It was a political statement. And if you read the testimony of the commissioners, that's what they did. And that political statement is best reserved for the CONCON or the legislature or the people voting at the general election, not the commissioners to get up on the soapbox, so to speak, and try to change the law in the middle of the process. That's what is confounding. I think I'll stop now, if it pleases the court, and I'll have Mr. Matsukawa come on up.
Thank you very much, Mr. Org. Mr. Matsukawa.
Thank you, members of the court. My name is Michael Matsukawa. I'm the petitioner in case number 741, Proceed. I'd like to discuss the citizens case, which was last decided in 2005, because I think it addresses the questions raised by the Chief Justice and Justice Nakayama and Justice Duffy. How do we resolve the districting problem? That's, as Mr. Rorick argued, is step two of this process. That's Article 4, Section 6. As Mr. Rorick argued, the first obligation of the commission under Article 4, Section 4 was not to worry about where people lived on the ground, on what street, in what zip code, in what census tract, but within each island unit, Oahu, Kauai, the Maui unit, and the Big Island unit. That is where the commission got confused. They started looking at where are they on the street. What block? Are they near a military base? Are they on base, off base? Where are the dependents there? Well, that's part of part two. They were hung up with a districting problem. And the citizens case provides guidance on the districting within each island. Although the citizens case dealt with a county reapportionment, the same principles apply as articulated by this court, which is you use the systematic approach. You follow the Brown case. You follow the cases cited in the citizens case, which says you make your best effort, good faith effort, use a rational basis, but a systematic approach to how you deal with that obvious problems which will always arise in a district boundary within an island district. Do you go near this street or that street? How do you deal with the statistical unknown? But Mr. Rosenbrock, the staff is capable. They have software. The minutes show that to be true. And as to the remedy, time is of the essence. Fortunately, the electoral machine process hasn't started yet. So we're not like where we were in the early 1960s cases of Holt versus Richardson and the Gunter case, where the process of the election was already underway. And the court was being asked to stop the election, or to modify the election, or to make a temporary plan. The election process has not yet started for 2012.
Mr. Matsukawa, if the commission, and it says the problem is they only have, for some non-residents, only zip codes, then how can they overcome that problem? If they have only zip codes, how can they allocate these people to permanent residents to, or non-residents to specific districts?
This is a quote, but I think the record shows that the staff, Mr. Rosenbrock and Ersey, had access to information by which they could make a reasonable effort, a systematic approach, to extrapolate. For example, we know there are 59,000 dependents. We know where some of them were assigned to by zip code. We know also that 23,000 of those dependents were spouses. They're spouses of the 47,000 that you asked about being undisputed. So 23,000 belong to, reasonably can be estimated to belong to the 47,000. I believe there are methods available in the software to make a reasonable extraction. We may not be perfect on the within the island districting, but that difficulty should not excuse the commission from not doing its job at all. The record seems to shout out, it's too hard, it's too difficult, so let's go home and leave the status quo. Well,
Mr. Matsukawa, wasn't there the premise of the commission, or at least some commissioners, that a permanent resident had to mean the same thing for Section 4 as Section 6? In other words, if someone was being counted and assigned a particular location in Section 6, they had to be also counted in the analysis under Section 2, so that you really, if you didn't know where someone lived, you could not extract them under the analysis in Section 4. Do you agree or disagree with the notion that that's a constitutionally mandated position based on the language of our Constitution?
I disagree. I think the Constitution is clear and unambiguous.
That it does not have to go that way? It can be
that the commission had it backwards. That the issue is, you take the zip codes, you know what island they live on. Article 4 says you look at where the people live, in which island you're in. Districting comes separate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Aina?
Thank you.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, Charlene Aina, Deputy Attorney General for the respondent, Governor Abercrombie. This is unusual in that nominally the governor is a respondent, having been sued by the petitioners. The governor's position, however, is that there is error in the final reapportionment plan for 2011. That error is significant, and the court has extraordinary powers to order relief to correct those errors.
Ms. Aina, just to follow up on the question to Mr. Matsukawa, if you have people, you can only identify people's location by zip codes, didn't the commission come up with what they called a disaggregation model to distribute those people among the different districts?
My understanding of the commission's record is that they did not use the basic zip code information that the military provided back in March of 2011.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, as looking at the different alternative methods, didn't they come up with what they called, the staff came up with what they called a disaggregation model in order to distribute those persons whose location could only be identified by zip codes as among the districts?
My understanding of the commission's documentation is that they were using, they initially looked at information from the military. March 2011, they received a listing of zip codes. These zip codes were attached to the testimony of Mr. Rohrig on September 19th. Those zip codes, which denominated, for instance, that in the zip code number 96789, which is Mililani, there were a total of 1,651 children, 1,130 spouses, and arguably the assumption is that the spouse had an active duty military person as spouse living in that same at that same location. And so arguably in the Mililani zip code 96789, if you use that March 2011 data, you would have 3,911 non-resident military people to extract. What the commission used for the disaggregation by zip code instead was the zip codes they obtained through the census data. And that census data was limited, or the zip codes they used was limited to those zip codes that corresponded to areas on base. And so the extraction B that was done is essentially based on zip codes obtained through the census data, but limited only to those geographic areas that are within military bases. So Mililani is not counted. The reason given in the documentation, if I understand correctly, is that the zip code information from the military this time around wasn't as reliable as the zip code information that the commission in 2001 received. And so while the 2001 commission relied on the zip code areas throughout the community to extract non-resident military, this time around what the commission concluded it ought to do is to rely on zip code information from the census, limited only to the geographic areas of the military bases. And as Mr. Matsukawa pointed out, what that resulted in was, for instance, them not taking into consideration at all the information the military provided in March of 2011 about where else on the island of Oahu in particular the military ought to be, because they live outside the military bases as well. And what I've put on the board, on the easels this morning, are two maps. The one to your left is a map from the Reapportionment Commission's final report, a final plan. It is for the Mililani area. The zip codes involved are 96789, which is this area, and above that, 96786, which is the Wahiawa area, principally the Wahiawa area. These were chosen to illustrate what how significant the error is if you totally ignore the zip code information as to military persons living off base, which the commission thought was not, didn't have confidence in, enough confidence in to use. What What we would suggest, and we have suggested, the governor has suggested, is that there's a way to corroborate the and perhaps assure the commission that the zip code information that the military initially provided is reliable. And the corroboration we suggest is that the Department of Education be made to provide impact aid information. The state of Hawaii receives impact aid for all federally connected students pursuant to 20 USC 7001 at SAP. Every year in September, each student is given the federal survey card, which was included in the governor's opposition to the motion for summary judgment, which was struck, but we would ask that the court take judicial notice of that and include it in the record in addition to what it has already ordered to be.
Was that methodology presented to the commission, and if so, what was the commission's reaction to that possibility of corroborating this data?
My personal understanding is that it may have been raised with staff as a possible source of information. The corroboration suggestion was not made, but it was suggested to staff that the federal impact aid information could be helpful. And it could be helpful because that information contains the actual home address of a military-connected student.
In any case, at least at the level, the first level, where the commission had to determine what the permanent resident population was on each island. It could do that.
Yes.
It? And that's the first thing it did, because that would be the basis for determining how many Senate seats would be assigned to each island or each island group. Is that correct?
If you trust the zip code information that the military provided in March of 2011, which the commission, in our view, in the governor's view, should have trusted.
Where does that appear in the record, the information provided by the military in March of 2011?
It appears in several places, but the easiest one to find is the one that the listing is included as an attachment to Mr. Roerig's testimony on September 19th. And so if you go to the Reapportionment Commission's webpage, and you click on to meeting materials by the date September 19, 2011, you will come to Mr. Roerig's testimony, to which is attached an appendix 2, which lists all of the zip codes.
Two questions. One, you said if you trust. What is your position?
Are you saying that?
There is a possibility that we don't have to trust it. I mean, I don't know what.
No, I did not mean to leave that inference, Justice Acova. The governor believes that you should use that information.
The second question I had was, assuming then that you can allocate the seats as among the different islands or island groups, the problem we're talking about only exists at the second level, where you have to assign those seats or draw the districts for those seats.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Correct.
And in that case, you would want to establish a target population for a district and try to come within that target population for each senatorial district.
Yes. The target would be based upon, as Mr. Roerig said,
and is it
the
your position
island
that
totals.
That can be done, as opposed to the commission's apparent position?
What the governor understands would be, should be done, or can be done and ought to be done. The governor suggests that school sites could be the center of a district. With the information that you get from the DOE, you ought to be able to define, with that as a center, at school sites as centers, you ought to be able to understand how many of the militarily connected kids are in a particular area.
Putting aside the greater constitutional question of whether or not what the commission did really satisfies one person, one vote, and looking only at the question of the Senate seat, the representation has been made that all there needs to be is a switch of 20,000 in terms of permanent resident in order to allow one seat to shift, one Senate seat to shift over to the Big Island. You agree with that?
I understand that to be the case from the reports of the commission staff.
So, do you agree that 47,000 people, it's indisputable that 47,000 people are non-residents, and so just accepting even that figure alone would cause a shift in a Senate seat.
Right, and it is apparent in the commission's reports that the Big Island's the number of military connected persons in the Big Island is far less than it is approximately. There's a report that indicates that the Hawaii military is at the very most 793.
Ms. Aina, could I ask? I'll ask the same question I asked Mr. Roark. Is it the governor's position that we should direct the commission to take 120,000 people off the top in implementing Section 4, or that we should direct them to do something else, like follow Extraction B or Extraction C or some other methodology? What is the governor's position? What should we tell them to do?
I think the court, the governor clearly appreciates that February 1st is the date that nomination papers under current law have to be available. And in order for nomination papers to be distributed, you have to know where the districts are and who would qualify as a registered voter within a district in order to be a candidate. So there is that pressure on this. If we weren't under that pressure, the governor clearly would agree that 120,000 plus persons ought to be extracted because they are presumed non-residents under the citizens' decision, and the Constitution clearly says only permanent residents may be included.
Would that be true even if a substantial number of those 120,000 in the end could not be reliably placed in their place of residence on a particular island? Say, with regard to the dependents, my recollection or understanding is the staff of the commission critiqued the zip codes of the dependents and had some very serious concerns about their accuracy. Assuming that a very large number of these folks could not be placed in a particular district, would that change the governor's position at all, or would the governor still say 120,000 off the top and then do the best you can in placing these folks in districts, even if that meant we might have 20, 30, 40,000 people who we really don't know where they live?
The governor has not spoken directly to me on that subject. My assumption is that, but I do understand him to say the fact that it's hard doesn't allow the commission not to do it. And
the commission's objection was that they felt that because of the data they had, that some residents would be excluded, permanent residents would be excluded in this 120,000 group. How do you respond to that?
Well, if the numbers with respect to the military are accurate, and no one seems to dispute the 47,000, nor do they seem to dispute the 933 active duty military who claim to be Hawaii residents, that that there shouldn't be a problem as to that, Justice Akoba?
Why 120,000 versus, say, alternative B or something between alternative A and alternative B?
Because alternative B does not include people in Mililani. We know from the student surveys for all of the Mililani schools that there are military-connected children who live, I think it's a fair assumption, they live with at least one parent, if not two, and they would not be counted under Extraction B because Mililani is not on-base housing.
What recommends alternative C over the other?
Alternative C is limited to students, and I have not looked at that as closely as I have the military numbers, but the Extraction C adds into the 12,000 in barracks and the 73 1,000 total in Extraction B, which is in barracks and on base military. It adds in students.
What reason was given by the commission for not following the March 30th, 2010 information provided by the military?
My understanding from the reports are such things as when they analyzed the data, there wasn't. It appeared as though there were spouses reported as dependents who were not married to any active duty military person that was included. How they determined that, I don't know, but there are specific references to that mistrust in the I believe it's the Appendix A, which is assessment of non-permanent population adjustment report originally provided August 17, 2011. This is the report from September, which suggests that there is little confidence in the zip code data that was provided in March 2011. I'm sorry that there's just so much material in the Reapportionment Commission publications that I'm unable to get you closer, but if you would like, I'd be more than happy, since this is a court of somewhat of record rather than appeal, I'd be happy to provide more accurate citations.
I may have missed this. You have gone over, I thought your answer was, you started to say if there weren't a February deadline, the governor would want 120,000 extracted. Did you go on to the second part? Because there is a February deadline, the governor's stance is different.
With respect to the 120,000, given the February 1st deadline, I've not spoken or been told what the governor's position is with respect to that juxtaposition. But I do know that he has consistently said, as late as last evening, that the fact that it's hard should not mean that the correct extraction should not occur.
Ms. Ona, regardless of the problems that have been discussed this morning, are you aware of any legal authority that would allow us to ignore the requirement of counting only permanent residents when the commission determines the population base for the four island units?
Justice Duffy, I understand 25-2A to say that there needs to be at least one public hearing in various specified areas before the final plan is filed. I do not understand there to be a loop back if you get to Article 4, Section 10, which is where we are now. I don't understand that statute to require a loop back. Should the commission or should the court correct the plan that had been put to public hearing? In other words, a court's plan is not subject to 25-2. At the same time, the court has plenary power under the Constitution to prescribe whatever relief you believe appropriate under the circumstances. And I would suggest under the circumstances, the public hearing is not required, and the court's thought processes and directions to the commission would be more than sufficient to assure the public that the plan is a proper plan.
One last question.
Go ahead.
The whole purpose of the 1992 amendment to the Constitution was to require counting only permanent residents as opposed to registered voters, correct?
Yes.
All right. So, thank you. We've talked about four options. One is A, extract 16,000. Second, I mentioned, which is we have 47,000 clearly on the face of it, should have been extracted, was not extracted by the commission. You have B, which extracts, 80,000?
73,000.
Alternative C, which extracts 120,000. So, in your opinion, which should this court adopt if it were to adopt one of those alternatives?
Justice Okobo, I don't believe Extraction C would extract $120,000. That I believe it would be only about $87,000 or 80-some thousand.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I stand corrected. But which one of those would you?
As I said earlier, I believe it has to be more than any of those three extractions because Mili Lani is not extracted. And the governor would also suggest that Mili Lani is not extracted under any of the commission's extraction procedures. $120,000 appears to be the most accurate at this point. In terms of ease, I would suggest that there might be another alternative, which is that there are 47,000 military, active duty military who declared themselves not to be residents of Hawaii, that the military could be asked for some sort of proportion, perhaps, of how many of their active duty military are married and how many are not, in a sufficient number of dependents added to the 47,000.
Let me ask you a question. The staff used a disaggregation model to place as an alternative students who only had zip codes as among the districts. Now, can that disaggregation model be used with respect to non-resident military persons and their dependents?
I don't know the answer to that question, Justice Okobo.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ina. We'll hear from Mr. Suzuki, and because the time that was used after the yellow light went on was due to the questions of the court, we'll give Mr. Suzuki his full 15 minutes.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Osa Suzuki, Deputy Attorney General. The Commission believes that the issue before this court this morning is whether the Commission abuses discretion when it did not extract more than 16,458 active duty military members and out-of-state university students, even though the Commission did not, despite its best efforts, have reliable data to locate more non-permanent non-residents. And to do so with the data they have and the statistical models that the Commission did have would have resulted in extracting from locations not based on actual residents, but based on a theoretical model. The Commission considered several options, including option A, B, C. And as the further option you go down the line, it was based on more suppositions and assumptions. The
Commission Mr. Suzuki, Mr. Matsukawa makes a charge that the reason there's a problem is because the Commission, despite the guidelines it adopted in April, it said you exclude non-resident military and non-resident students, voted 8-1, I'm just quoting from his memo, to ignore the provisions of Article 4 and to use total population instead, refusing to use the constitutionally mandated permanent residence population base. So from June 2011, at least, up until September, the commission apparently was on a course based on total population rather than the extraction or exclusion of non-resident military and student populations guideline it adopted in April. Why did that happen?
I believe the answer to that, Justice Okobo, is that the Commission didn't understand its responsibility to be a two separate step procedure. They looked at reapportionment and redistricting as one process. And in that effort, they first had to determine not only the resident population, but also where their location was specifically in order to fulfill their responsibilities. That was their understanding, and that was the reason why they would not simply lop off the
non-residents.
I mean, well, that kind of gets us right to the point, doesn't it, Mr. Suzuki? What was the basis, or what is the basis for that point of view, as opposed to the point of view that the petitioners advanced, which is that the 120,000 should come right off the top.
I think that the commission believed that it was interpreting the Constitution correctly when it believed that they had to do it together as one function as opposed to two separate functions. And I think that's the answer that I can give you today.
Well, I mean, is that
do I believe
is that based on what? Because you read constitutional provisions together, because there's a case out there? What was the basis for that conclusion, if there is one, that you can advance to us now?
I think the interpretation that the commission gave was that they believed that the way that it was done in the past is the way that they were going to do it, and that was the way that the support staff had indicated was the process to be followed.
Interpretation of the Constitution by interpreting it to be a one-step process instead of a two-step process?
I believe that the commission believed that the one-step process was the process that were to be followed, and that's the process that they did follow.
And do you think that's the correct process?
I believe that if that's the way that the commission has been interpreting the commissions in the past has been interpreting the process that way, that perhaps the court should give some deference to the interpretation of the administrative agencies that are bound to fulfill the responsibilities under the Constitution. Nobody had told them otherwise that process was inconsistent with their processes in the past.
If I could interrupt, Mr. Suzuki. It seems like the commission counted 47,082 active duty military who actually declared a state other than Hawaii is their home state. That was an affirmative declaration, and that information came from the military, USPACOM. How could they possibly count people as permanent residents who affirmatively said they had a home state elsewhere?
It was because it was the commission's understanding that in order to properly do their function as to reapportionment and that they needed to find the actual resident locations in order to extract people, because to indiscriminately or by modeling extract people from the districts without any real certainty and based on assumptions, the commission was not willing to go that far and to do that. So those that they couldn't specifically identify as to which census block they could be extracted from, they left them in. Knowing that would result in some known non-resident military population being included into the...
Do you think those 47,082 would want to be counted as permanent residents?
Well, I think some of the testimonies and arguments before the commissions that they kept their meetings was that regardless of whether these members are residents or non-residents, that they do seek the services of the legislators in their district for help when they need to. And so whether or not a legislator in a certain district has non-resident military members residing in their districts, they're not going to refuse giving services to them or representation to them. So they do get representation regardless. So I think that was some of the testimonies that were presented at these public hearings.
But weren't all those considerations already embodied in the policy decision to adopt as a base not registered voters, not census population, but resident, a permanent resident as the base? All of these arguments or considerations, were they all settled by the Constitution saying you use permanent residents?
I think we understand what the court is saying. It's that in the past, even since the last reapportionment constitutional amendments, and even since the citizens case in 2005, the circumstances have changed in that the information that was available previously is no longer available. Ms. Aina talked about getting the records from the Department of Education. that process would have required overcoming the obstacles of the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, FERPA, which would have required an extensive process of notification to parents before
Do you think that if, after the commission adopted the guidelines in April, where it said, we're going to use the census, we're going to extract non-resident military and students, if it took off from that point and started the process, would it have been able to come up with something that would have been more comfortable in terms of data to the commission members?
I think the difficulty was that this is a commission that has varied interests and varied positions, and to get consensus on that matter would be uncertain. I wouldn't
think. But the commission still has to follow the Constitution, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, most certainly.
If there were to be a new plan that would have to be required, what would the commission choose among the four alternatives? In your opinion, the four alternatives that were presented to Ms. Aina, you know, extraction A, B, C, or take off the 47,000 and then do an further extractions.
I think if the commission, if the court were to reject the commission's option A, which they adopted, option B would be the next best alternative, because that could be readily accomplished within the timelines.
Are extractions B or C constitutional? Do they exclude all non-residents?
No, they would not. They would exclude more non-residents, and certainly to answer Justice Acoba's question, I believe, was the necessary amount necessary to shift the Senate seat to the Big Island would have been 20,094, and that certainly would have been accomplished under option B. So that would resolve that issue. I think to determine whether or not all of the other issues are determined, because again, the commission wanted to make sure that it kept the basic island units intact.
At this point, Mr. Suzuki, are there any practical impediments to implementing the model suggested by the petitioners, which is to take the 120,000 off the top, as it were, and then do the best possible job of determining where people are within their respective districts, or how to place them within their respective districts?
You know, I would probably need to get in contact with the staff at the Office of Elections in order to get an answer to you on that.
But that's not in the record, then?
It's not in the record, I don't believe. And I could possibly ask if a person is here today whether that's a possibility or not.
Why did the commission think that the information from the military was unreliable?
Well, one example is for zip code 96857, the Defense Manpower Data Center showed 17,004 military members or sponsors, and 968 dependents of military members, for a total of 18,012 in that zip code. When the staff checked that zip code, the zip code for that turned out to be the workplace address for the military. So the assumption was that rather than giving the resident address, they were giving the workplace address for those military people. That's in Senator Solomon's page 6 of 16, appendix S. 96857, yes.
And 13,000 was provided in March of 2010 for that?
I'm sorry, I don't have the exact specific before me. Just have a synopsis, you know.
Mr. Suzuki, the 120,000 that we've been mentioning includes dependents, does it not, that number?
I believe so, Young.
Okay, and the commission had some, or the commission staff had some serious questions about whether there might be a substantial number of people, dependents being counted, who in fact didn't live in Hawaii. In other words, comparing the data from 01 to 010 or 011, there was reason in the commission's view or the staff's view to think that perhaps that data was over-including people and counting people who, in fact, lived outside of the state altogether. Is that right?
That's correct. And also, I think the concern was that in this day and age, to link the spouse to the military member, where the spouse might be working separately for the state of Hawaii for other county positions as their own careers, might have changed their residency to Hawaii.
So in that, if that's the case, should we, do you see any problem with going ahead and excluding all, I guess the number was 58,949 active duty dependents, even if the staff has misgivings about whether a substantial number of those people might in fact live in other states? Is that problematic under the Constitution in any way or not?
I believe that would be. It's basically taking out people that should be represented and belonging within the population count. That's doing the same thing as far as like taking guests or making estimations the other way. So I would think that the commission's position would be that's just as bad as leaving them in or taking them out. If you don't have any accurate basis for it, you're basically doing it on theoretical models or guessing.
What, in your view, should be the standard that we should apply in looking at what the commission does? It's a reasonable, good faith efforts to address. Obviously, there are many difficult questions like this. What should we be looking for in terms of the applicable test?
Kalamoku versus Okaka case talks about basically it's an abuse of discretion standard, whether the commission's inclusion of those that they couldn't specifically identify as to where they resided was an abuse of discretion or not.
When was that case decided?
That was 1994.
Any more recent cases?
And it's cited to the Paul versus Paul Electrical Service versus Bethel. No, I don't have any more recent cases in that.
But doesn't the Constitution say we're supposed to correct any error? Doesn't that imply a de novo review by
us? Yes, I except in these cases, the court did apply the abuse of discretion standard in their review.
Do you agree that the standard is, as laid out by the U.S. Supreme Court, not mathematical precision? So you don't have to be mathematically precise, but just honest, good faith effort by the commission to allocate these populations as equally as is practicable.
And
you agree
I don't
that?
Think there's any question that the commission thought that they were exercising good faith in what they did. There was no improper motivation.
Okay, my question was, do you agree with that, that that's the proposition?
Can you restate it again?
You're going to make me restate
just,
it.
I just need to. I just
do
need
you
to
know what the law is on the standard for reviewing reapportionment commission acts?
I'm submitting that the standard review is an abuse of discretion on the commission's part.
How about honest, good faith effort and not mathematical precision to ensure that the populations are as equal as is practicable?
I would agree with that.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. No further questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Suzuki. Now we'll hear Mr. Rorick for rebuttal.
I wish I could talk fast. A lot of things here. In no particular order, I'm just going to go backwards, and the most recent thing I'll take first. I think the citizen's case, Justice Okoba, I think you're right. The citizen's case controls the effort. And if you look at House Bill 2327, the intent on the face of it is clear because it says in the committee report that you extract all. So the statutory intent is clear. It's not discretionary whether you extract all. It's you extract all because the statutory intent is clear. Not the case in Kawamoto. In Kawamoto, they used discretion because they had to make an approximation, and they spoke more about the question of injunctive relief, which was discretionary in nature. This is the first time we know of that Article 4, Section 4, Article 4, Section 6, and Article 4, Section 10 have been directly addressed to this court, and we would suggest that this court's decision in Citizens, the statutory intent of House Bill 2327 has already been established. This court says in that case that you don't have discretion. They compared it with Kawamoto. This court compared it with Kawamoto and said, in Kawamoto, you had a little different situation. Here, statutory intent is clear. It's on the money. The intent is you take all, so you take all even if it's hard. So that's,
Mr. Rorick, doesn't Citizens allow for a 10% mathematical deviation, though?
Yes, it does, and thank you for asking that question. The final deviation between the Big Island and Oahu is 17.9%. And there never was a discussion after they adopted Plan A that it was way off the chart constitutionally under Reynolds versus Sims. Now, another thing is important. Article 4, Section 4, Article 4, Section 6, and Article 4, Section 10 are all a spin-off from all of those equal protection cases. This was Hawaii's way of dealing with the non-resident military population. The whole issue was discussed in the U.S. Supreme Court case of Burns versus Richardson. And they said that the non-resident military fluctuates up and down depending on what's going on in the Far East, whether we have carriers in the Hormuz Straits or we don't. And that's why the 1968 CONCON took up the issue. And that's why we are where we are. So moving quickly. The August 17th report done by called the Assessment of Non-Permanent Population Adjustment, the commission staff report that was included in the record on September 23rd. There's two versions of that. Either version has very helpful information. If you look at page 11 of the August 17th version, when they're talking about the ability to extract, at page 11 it says dependence. Okay, we have this issue of the zip codes, but on page 11 they get right down to brass tacks, and this is what it says: no income tax information is collected for dependence. Dependency in DEERS is evaluated based on the rules that establish eligibility for benefits, not on tax status. Here's the crucial sentence: it is not unreasonable to assume that resident status of the dependent is the same as that of the sponsor in most cases, and there is precedent for the assumption for 1991 and 2001 exclusions. That's one of the issues that I believe this court is trying to grope with the right solution. If there's 47,000 active non-resident military personnel, there's 58,000 dependents. Now, if you want to make a refinement and make a proportion, there were 900 or so military that were Hawaii residents. You want to take some of that off of the 58,000, you still come to about 119,000 as a total extraction. So that's the second matter I wanted to raise.
And what would the standard be for us reviewing that kind of adjustment? In your view, it'd be a good faith standard or abuse of discretion? How would we evaluate whether they did that appropriately or not?
I think you have to be guided by the Citizens case. I believe that's the controlling precedent in Hawaii. And the short answer is you have to use your best efforts to make it one man, one vote. And let me address this issue. Justice Acoba addressed something that is
that I find disingenuous for the commission to argue to this court, saying that the reason that they used the 16,000 figure, all right, was because that was their best estimate. If you look at what they actually did there, that was hardly a fair way to do it, because of the 16,000 extraction, 15,000 came from Oahu. 15,000 came from these military bases. If you take that 15,000 off the average number of voters per Senate district on Oahu, the 16.5 deviation that you started with on June 28th between the Big Island and Oahu, and that's an equal protection issue. And their own standards say anything over 16% is unjustified. So they went from 16.5% to 17.9%. And that's not using the smallest district on Oahu. That's using the average number that shows up in our appendix N, page 2. That 52,956, something like that. That's that figure. So we believe it's disingenuous for the commission to argue that that was okay, because that made the situation that was bad, it made it terrible. So you can't do that again. The reason why they Appendix F was generated by the staff was they've been down this road before. Commissioner Masumoto was in favor of keeping these people in the count in 1991 and 2001, and he testified to that effect on June 28th. He had the historical knowledge, the same thing as David Rosenbaum. They both had the historical knowledge. And the historical knowledge was, we made these guidelines for you commissioners in 2011 because we have eliminated the gray areas. You just follow the procedure and you won't get in trouble. And there were witnesses, Mr. Baines or Baines. He hammered on that at every meeting. And the suggestion was that they sort of, yes, thank you, but they put him off. So my time's up. Thank you very much. This has been a wonderful experience, and we hope you will soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to all our counsel. Thank you for your arguments today. The court will take this matter under advisement.